Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available.
Tech Guide.
The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further.
Tech Guide.
I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot selling device.
Tech Guide.
You know, we want them to be light. We want them to be portable. And this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Welcome to episode 7 of the Tech Guide Podcast. Thank you for listening and thanks for downloading. I'm Stephen Fenwick, editor of techguide.com.au, and we've got another packed show for you today. On the news front, we're going to be talking about the Olympics and how you can catch up with Google's new Olympic Hub. And we're also going to talk about Samsung's increasing lead over Apple in the smartphone market. Very competitive market, that one. And in our reviews, we'll run our eye over a few products this week, over the Galaxy Nexus 7 tablet, the new Bose Video Wave 2, and of course, Apple's new Mountain Lion operating system for the Mac. In our interview, we'll chat with Rajiv Mehta about self-tracking using today's technology, of course. A really interesting concept, that one. And we'll also get to your questions in the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Now, a Tech Guide news update.
Well, the Olympics are on. How good is it having the Olympics on again? Oh, fond memories of the Sydney Olympic Games. I was actually the sports editor of the Daily Telegraph when the Olympics were on here in Sydney. So that was quite a busy time, but quite an enjoyable time. But it's London's turn this time around. And we've come a long way in terms of technology and being able to follow everything that's going on at the Olympics. And Google have come up with a brand new concept. They've aggregated a lot of the content to be able to follow all the events, the medal tallies, your country, particular athletes, with a new thing they've called the Olympic Hub. And Google being a search specialist, there's a link there where google.co.uk/Olympics, and that will take you into the Olympic Hub. And here you'll find shortcuts to the breaking stories, the medal tally, and you can even type in various search terms. For example, Australia at the Olympics. It'll give you the latest news, Australia's medal tally, and of course this search will work for all the other countries as well. And of course it brings in the other Google properties, namely YouTube. So there is actually a link to the official Olympic YouTube channel and lets you relive. A great way to catch up with events, and especially with the time difference, with most of the finals either happening very early in the morning or overnight our time. Really good way to catch up is using YouTube channel or the Foxtel Olympic, the Olympic app too for tablets, but which we'll talk about in a moment. But on the Google front, the Olympic Hub, you can access, as I mentioned, google.co.uk/Olympics. There is one limitation though with YouTube. You can watch catch up TV, but that you can't access any of the live streaming, the live feed of events, because your browser will detect that you're here in Australia, or if you are actually listening in Australia. Hello to anyone else who's listening around the world. But if you are listening here in Australia, because the rights are held by our local broadcasters, Channel 9 and Foxtel, the live feed of events won't be able to be accessed here. But that won't stop you accessing the catch-up TV. But just on, as I mentioned, the Foxtel app, which we mentioned in a previous program, that has really been a handy tool. I wake up, if I'm not up early enough to watch the events live, it's a great way to catch up with them after you've woken up, because the way that they've set it up with their catch-up service, it gives you a video, and all the various chapters of that video are the main events of the night. So you can jump to the gold medal of the events, the semi-finals, whatever events you happen to be wanting to see. In this case, it was the swimming. So I caught up with all the swimming finals, the semi-finals, and how all the Aussies fared. So if you want to catch up with all your Olympic news, it's not hard to do it thanks to Google's Olympic Hub and also the Foxtel London 2012 app, which can be accessed by current subscribers. So if you've got the sports package, you're a home subscriber with a set-top box, you can access that service. So there's no way we're going to miss out on any Olympic news. Well, the Samsung has extended their lead in the smartphone market over Apple. Some extraordinary figures released earlier last week about the shipments for Samsung in the second quarter of 2012. In 2012 Q2, Samsung shipped a remarkable 52.1 million units. Now, this has obviously been helped along by their brand new handset, the Galaxy S3, which I've reviewed on Tech Guide for anyone who wants to log into my site to check out my review. It has just gone gangbusters. I think in the month of June alone, it sold 10 million handsets, and that's obviously enhanced Samsung sales a great deal. But coming in at second, at half of the half of Samsung's figures there, and nothing to be sneezed at, is Apple with sales of 26 million iPhones in the second quarter of 2012. Now, we all know that there is no new iPhone yet, and Samsung have really taken advantage of that fact that once they released the Galaxy S3, there was no Apple announcement from the Worldwide Developers Conference, which was in early June. So Samsung had a free run, a Rails run, to release the Galaxy S3 to great success. There are a lot of people who came off their iPhone 4 contracts and didn't have another iPhone to go directly into. There was a lot of readers contact me, a lot of people calling in on the radio saying that, look, I had an iPhone 4, but after 2 years, I didn't want to get the iPhone 4S because it's basically the same phone. Apart from Siri and a couple other enhancements like the camera, it wasn't enough for many of the customers to jump in into that particular device. They're all waiting for the latest iPhone, the iPhone 5, whenever that will come out. We're hearing September, October, we're unsure. But there were a lot of customers who decided the Galaxy S3 was just fresh on the market, a very attractive device, one of the best smartphones on the market at the moment, and that's including comparing it to the iPhone. And they've jumped straight into the Galaxy S3. They've left Apple behind. A lot of questions when it first came out. Do I wait for the iPhone? Do I get the Galaxy S3? And this was before the Worldwide Developers Conference, which was the time when Apple was rumored to be announcing the new iPhone. As it turned out, they didn't do that. So there were a lot of customers who decided to jump across to Android with the Galaxy S3. So Samsung extending their lead. The Juniper Research, which is the company who collated those figures and actually sent that release, said that Samsung have obviously taken advantage of their worldwide global brand strength and have taken the lead among the many Android smartphone manufacturers. And there are a few Android manufacturers, like companies like HTC, Sony, which they pulled out, that they predicted should be doing a lot better. They're a global brand, and the Xperia brand, they said, is well established, but the marketing of its products has been a little bit disappointing. This is according to Juniper Research analyst Daniel Ashton, which I've written on the Tech Guide website. But all eyes will be on Apple. The iPhone 5 will be out in the coming months, and I'm certain of one thing: Apple will narrow that gap once the brand new iPhone is released. Who knows when in the next couple of months, but it's sure to be a hit.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Our good friend at Kogan, Mr. Ruslan Kogan in particular, come up with a great idea to release a Collingwood-branded television. Now, we all know Collingwood is the very famous AFL team, which is its president is Eddie Maguire, the Channel 9 sporting commentator and personality, and he actually was involved in the discussions to allow Kogan to use the Collingwood emblem to brand these 42-inch LED TV on the front of the TV, on the remote control, and even on the startup screen of the LED TV. It's only $449, and if you're a real Collingwood fan, what an attractive thing to buy. My question is, where is my South Sydney TV? Anyone who knows me or follows me on Twitter or is my friend on Facebook knows that I'm a huge South Sydney supporter. If Kogan decided to release a South Sydney TV, I would have my order in already. But we're waiting to see that. He's come across a whole new category of product here. So if he does release a red and green TV for the South Sydney Rabbitohs, I'll be sure to step in and buy one.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick.
We're going to kick off our reviews this week with the brand new Google Nexus 7 tablet. This is the highly anticipated entry into the tablet market by Google. We've already seen Google Nexus products, so the smartphones have released, I think, three of those products into the market now. But this is their first tablet effort, the Nexus 7, and it's done a couple of things here that I really like. It's really undercut the price of the iPad and also the size of the iPad. Now, we all know iPads are 9.7 or 10-inch, around the 10-inch size. And they start at the iPad 2 is about $499, $549, whatever, for the new iPad. And a lot of companies, Android manufacturers in particular, have made the mistake of setting their 10-inch tablets side-by-side with the iPad, same price point, and when the iPad controls around 70% of the tablet market, you know you're in for a bit of a battle. And a battle that, let's face it, 30% of them are losing. 70% of them are losing, I should say. So when Google decided to release the Nexus 7 at a nicer size, the 7-inch size, and also running Google's brand new Android 4.1 operating system, that's it's called Jelly Bean. Now, and for those who don't know, these funny names are the code names given to the Android operating systems that are actually in alphabetical order. You'll find that we've had Gingerbread, Honeycomb, Ice Cream Sandwich, H-I-J. J is for Jelly Bean. So that's for those of you who didn't know that little tidbit of information, that is why we're following that particular order, and they decide to assign names of food to them, sweet food to them by the looks of it. Someone's got a sweet tooth over there at Google. But anyway, the Nexus 7, I've got a full review on techguide.com.au, and I really like this device. It's a great value device. It's $249 for the 8-gigabyte version. $319 for the 16 gig version, 7-inch screen, 1280 by 800 resolution. It's small enough to fit in your hand. So you can hold this, I think it's 12 centimeters across. So you can actually comfortably hold this in one hand. So it's meant to be held like a book or even a large smartphone. The one thing I found interesting was the fact that it didn't naturally rotate the screen. So like an iPad, you can choose to view it landscape or portrait in certain modes. Like when it's on the home page or just looking at the apps, it only displayed them down the screen in portrait mode, which I found really interesting. It's like Google's trying to tell us how they want us to use this device. I think they should leave it up to the user so they can feel comfortable using it the way they want to. But running 4.1, the first product to run the latest Android operating system, means that you've got access to Google Play. You've got access to all the content that you've already invested. If you've got a Google account and you can access all that, you know, you can access your Gmail and all your content. Not all the content's available here. Like in the US, there's a lot more content available for this particular product, including magazines and music. Not all that it's available here. Hopefully down the track we are going to actually get that here in Australia, but because let's face it, that's why they built this thing as a content consumption device. It's really taking on the Kindle Fire, the color tablet in the US at the moment. But if you're looking at a tablet, I like this for a number of reasons. I've mentioned the size, the price. And it has some limitations. It's a Wi-Fi only product. So if you wander outside of a Wi-Fi, your hotspot or at your home network, you're left to your own devices there with a connectivity. Although the natural thing to do, and we'll touch on this in the help desk, is to use your smartphone as the Wi-Fi hotspot. That's a possibility if you do want to connect to the internet. But another limitation I thought was strange was having no way to expand the memory. There was no micro SD card slot to get more memory up from 8 gig and the 16 gig options. But it's already in stores now, the Google Nexus 7. I've written a complete review on techguide.com.au, and feel free to go and read it.
You're listening to Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Now, Bose is the sort of company that has an amazing heritage of audio technology and audio quality in their products. What I like about the company is that they don't just release a product for the sake of it. They release a product when they've made a technological breakthrough that will improve the quality of their products. And the Bose VideoWave 2 is a great illustration of that type of product and that type of technology and that type of mindset. Bose's the VideoWave, for those who haven't heard of the VideoWave range of products at Bose, is basically a television. At first glance, it looks like a TV. It's available in 46-inch and 55-inch models. The VideoWave 2, obviously a 1080p full HD LED display, but it's so much more than just a television. What it also is a home theater system and a really high-end music system. Now, built in behind the TV is their waveguide technology, which creates a virtual surround sound experience for viewers. And I've seen a demo of the new product, and the original product was quite dramatic, where listeners are actually hearing sounds from the side, from behind them, from places where there are no speakers. You could have sworn there was a speaker behind you. There is sound coming from behind you, around you. But this is Bose's technology in action. There's a tweeter array and subwoofers arranged in the product and shooting out these sounds to create this virtual surround soundscape without the need to have these multiple physical surround sound speakers. It's really quite remarkable. If you have an opportunity, head into a Bose store and ask for a demonstration. It is really quite cool. But what it also is, on top of all that, is also a high-end music system. So it also comes with an iPod dock. So you can plug in your iPhone or your iPod, and you can listen to all your favorite music. The information, track information, comes up on the screen, allows you then to see how navigate your music using their remote control. Got quite a simple remote control that controls all of the products. It's got a central console that has one cable connection to the screen, but then all your sources like your Blu-ray player, your iPod, your console, your gaming console, all connect into the central console that then connects to the TV. And the one remote control then can be your universal remote control for all the products that you've connected to it. But what about the price? Being a Bose product, you're looking at quality, but you're also paying for that quality. The 46-inch model is $6,999. The 55-inch model is $7,999. But there are people going to say, boy, that's expensive for a television. But as I said, it's not just a television. If you were to go out and buy a high-end TV, a home theater surround system, and a separate music, a high-end audio system, I don't think you get much change for $5,000, $6,000. That'd be a fair investment, especially for the type of quality that you're getting. So if you're a fan of high-end audio, high quality, this virtual surround, a really cool system that you don't have to snake the cables around the room, connect all the different speakers around the room, and if you can afford it, the Bose VideoWave 2 is well worth your consideration. I've done a full review on techguide.com.au for anyone who wants to check it out, but do yourself a favor, head into a store, Bose store, there's plenty of them around Australia, and have a demo. You won't believe your ears. Well, last week too, we saw the release of Mountain Lion, Apple's highly anticipated new operating system for the Mac. This is an upgrade from the Lion system. I really enjoy the fact that Apple used the feline naming system with all their different. We've had Tiger and Leopard and Jaguar. Now we've gone from Leopard to Snow Leopard and now Lion. And here we are, a Mountain Lion. This is version 10.8 of OS 10. And the beauty of Mountain Lion is that it's a download, so you don't have to buy a disc, go into a store and buy a physical disc. It's a download that's priced at only $20.99. Now, that's pretty good value considering if you do own a Mac, the number of extra features you get with this upgrade is quite remarkable. And what I like about it is the fact that it is actually you're inheriting a lot of features that you may have seen for the first time on an iPod, an iPad, and an iPhone. Those features include iMessaging, cloud integration, the notification center, notes, these sort of things that really sort of bring that Apple family of products even closer. And the fact you've got iCloud to keep track of all of your documents, your apps, your notes, reminders, and your notifications, it just makes it easy from switching from one to the other. So just quickly going through some of the features with the messaging, and this was introduced with the iPhone, was iMessage, and then later on then with through the iPad, where iPhones could message other iPhones. You know if you're sending an iMessage, if you're on your iPhone, the send icon turns blue. And if the bubble of your message in your little message field is blue, that means that was an iMessage. If it's green, it's been sent as a regular text message. So you can that system has allowed you to send messages between iPads to iPhones, and now with Mountain Lion, it extends the reach of those iMessages now to your Mac. So you can send Mac to Mac, Mac to iPhone, to iPad, iPad, and vice versa. So easy way to keep track of your messaging. Notification Center is another cool new feature too, which I quite like. One thing with the Mac, if you try to focus on a bit of work and you hear your email chime go off, there's the temptation is to check who's just emailed you, taking you out of the current task you're doing. But with Notification Center, it allows you to a small notification pops up in the top right hand corner to give you just a short preview of the message, the reminder, whatever notifications come in, the Twitter message, Twitter mention, whatever you've set in your notifications, just pops up briefly in the right hand corner and slips away. If you do actually want to go in and read it even further, it allows you then to click on that, or you can slide out the notification drawer and go straight into that email reminder, whatever happens to be popping up there. Other enhancements, it includes obviously iCloud integration as well, and in particular documents in the cloud. So you can create and edit documents on your Mac and then access them on your other devices, on your iPad or your iPhone. It's also got a bit of a tighter Twitter integration as well into Mountain Lion, I've noticed. So you can tweet directly from the Notification Center. There's a small box at the top of the notification drawer that slides out. Another interesting addition is dictation. So rather than typing, wherever there's a text entry area on your Mac, you can now talk to your Mac. So it's kind of like a little Siri-like microphone. If you hit the function button twice, a little Siri-type microphone pops up on the screen. And I've tested it. It's actually quite surprisingly accurate, and even long sentences it remembers and translates. You speak rather than typing, whether it's an email or a Facebook status, tweet, whatever you want to do, wherever there's text, you can now talk. One thing to note though with dictation is that you need an internet connection. Anything that is spoken, it needs to be sent back to Apple's system. It's translated then into text and then it appears on your screen. So if you don't have an internet connection, it's not going to work. There are other programs out there like Dragon Dictation, for example, that actually do all that processing on board the computer. But if you're using Mountain Lion and you want to use the dictation, say you're on a plane, for example, you don't have an internet connection, it's not going to work. So take note of that. You need an internet connection for dictation to work. A number of other enhancements. PowerNap is another great way to have your Mac install all of your updates while it's in sleep mode. Before PowerNap, you used to have to wake your Mac, make all your updates and do everything you need to do before you can get on with your work. But PowerNap now allows you to have all those updates while the computer's in sleep mode. Full review, techguide.com.au. Price is $20.99, and an excellent upgrade if you are looking to upgrade your Mac. You might have a MacBook Pro, you might have an iMac or a MacBook Air. Mountain Lion, highly recommended update. Full review at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide interview.
This week's Tech Guide interview is with Rajiv Mehta, who's the co-organizer of a global movement called The Quantified Self. And what that's all about self-tracking and self-learning. And while self-tracking is nothing new, the latest technology has played a huge part in making it easier for people to collect and analyze the results and then seek to improve the various aspects of their life. Now, we're talking about things like self-tracking, things like your sleep, your training, and your general health. We caught up with Rajiv Mehta, who's in Australia, for a health informatics conference to tell us a little bit more about it. Rajiv, thanks for joining us. Tell us, self-tracking, it's been made a lot easier now with technology, is that right?
That's right. There are increasing number of gadgets as well as cell phone applications, smartphone applications that make it easier for people to keep track of different aspects of their lives and to analyze the data and see what they might learn about themselves.
And the benefits of this, I know the quantified self is something that we've been hearing about that I've just spoken about on my podcast. Tell us, the idea of that is sort of self-improvement through keeping track of what you're doing in your life. Is that right?
Yes. In fact, the starting point is not jumping to self-improvement. The starting point is understanding about yourself. And that could lead to changes that you make that are beneficial. But the first step is to know yourself. And so, for example, many people track sleep. because they desire to have better sleep. But the first point is actually discovering how much they do sleep. When do they sleep well? When do they don't? Which then perhaps helps them to improve their sleep.
Now, this is a technology podcast, so of course technology is helping us track ourselves. Tracking yourself is nothing new, but the fact that we've got so many gadgets and applications and all these kinds of things has made it even easier, hasn't it?
That's right. And the technologies are important in several different ways. One is that they simply encourage us to try new things. There's the little shiny new gadgets encourage us to sort of get, say, a Nike Plus or their equivalent today to learn how much do we run, to learn how far do we walk. Different gadgets like Zio and so forth help us to track our sleep. And simply the interest it generates in us from seeing interesting new technology gets us inspired to do it. Then, of course, the data itself is often very valuable. For some people that they need the data on an ongoing basis, they're trying to fine-tune their performance or their life, like the athletes at the Olympics do. For other people, just using it for a short while sort of opens up a window for them to better understand themselves, and that's more than good enough.
So what are the main things we track? You mentioned sleep, our exercise. What are the main things that are most beneficial to keep track of?
I think it's very hard to answer the question what's beneficial for people in general, because the really key part is what's beneficial for you in your life. And so a lot of the things that people are tracking today include, in a sense, the obvious: sleep and diet and exercise, mood and so forth. But what's valuable for you will depend on what's important in your life.
And what you obviously use a lot of gadgets yourself to keep track of things. So you mentioned Nike Plus. What are some of the things that you use to keep track of your data?
Well, it's quite interesting, yes. I've been in the technology field all my life. And in my personal life, I'm relatively low tech. I think of technology as a tool that you use to enhance your life, but not as a means in itself. So there have been times, for example, last summer, I was concerned about my sleep. And so I started keeping track of my sleep. And in a sense, I used an app for this, but it was very low tech. I didn't use a gadget. Every morning I got up and I simply jotted down how much I slept. But then I looked at the data and I'll analyze the data, and I saw from the trends in the data that, in fact, I personally did not have a sleep issue. Mm-hmm. There were ups and downs over the course of 4 months, but in a sense, that's called being human. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, a good friend of mine, who I'll talk about it in my talk, it tracked his sleep in incredible detail for a long time, for months, for a year, and was able to improve his sleep dramatically. And this was important for him because the improved sleep dramatically improved his health as well.
And so you're here in Australia. You're from San Francisco, which is quite a high-tech town, I must say. But you're here in Australia too. You're conducting some talks. Is that right? Tell us a bit about that.
So I'm speaking at the Health Informatics Conference, and I have two keynote presentations I'm doing. One is about the self-tracking movement and its impact on the future of healthcare. And there I'm really speaking about what are all these people doing that are innovating at the edge? What are we learning from them, and how can that be applied to healthcare in general? Mm-hmm. So as an example, in healthcare we often encourage people to do the right thing, but the right thing is really what's normal in the population. What these tools help you decide, learn, is what is best for you. And so there's a lot that we can apply over there. The other talk I'm giving is really talking about technologies for caring of your family. So caring of elderly parents, of sick family members, of young children with chronic illnesses and so forth. And there I'm emphasizing the importance of these tools to help us with the mundane tasks of caregiving. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we focus on the dramatic. You know, someone has just been discharged from the hospital, someone has just entered the hospital, they've been diagnosed with a new illness. But then there's the day-to-day, which goes on for months and sometimes years, and tools can help us with that.
Okay. What are some examples of that, just in wrapping up? What are some examples of that, the tracking the elderly and our family and things like that?
Well, one of the things that where the quantified self and the two tie together is that if you're doing an experiment, it's really important to be able to remember to do the experiment, mm-hmm. to take this new diet thing that you're doing and to write down the data and so forth. And in our busy lives, it's actually very difficult to remember to do those things. And so we in the self-tracking movement have been developing lots of tools to help with remembering and tracking. Mm-hmm. We're now using that for healthcare as well.
Rajiv, thanks for your time today.
You're very welcome.
answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
This week's Tech Guide Help Desk, if you do want to have your question answered or mentioned on the program, you can email us here at techguide@techguide.com.au or send your question through to our Tech Guide Forum, where we're growing a really great community of readers on Tech Guide's Forum, where I've got a lot of great, really loyal readers who jump in on the forums and answer all the readers' questions. There's several categories where you can send your question, so feel free to join us there at on the Tech Guide Forum, and your question may end up on the Tech Guide Help Desk. But one question that's been around a fair bit is people who, when they come to buy tablets, and there's many of them, we mentioned earlier, the Google Nexus 7 is a Wi-Fi only product. And of course, the other popular tablets, of course, the iPad, is available in Wi-Fi or 3G flavors. A lot of people are asking, look, do I need the 3G version? I get asked this question a fair bit. I want to buy an iPad. Should I buy the Wi-Fi only? Do I get the 3G version? And a lot of people are confused about whether they need it. My answer to them is, well, they don't really realize that your smartphone could be your 3G connection. We've already got a data component to our phone plans. As many of us, I've got a 4 gigabyte data allowance on my iPhone, on my plan, and I never get anywhere near using that type of data just on my phone. But I could put that data connection, that data allowance to use if I turn my iPhone or whatever smartphone I happen to be using, an Android phone, into a Wi-Fi hotspot. Now, rather than me having to spend the extra money on a 3G iPad, I can buy a Wi-Fi only iPad or other tablet, whatever tablet I happen to be using, the Google Nexus 7 or any other tablet that happens to be Wi-Fi only. And then you can utilize your 3G connection on your smartphone, be it an Android, be it an iPhone, even Windows phone, the new latest Nokia Windows phones that are going to have an upgrade and allow that to become a Wi-Fi hotspot as well. So rather than having two data plans, so if you do decide to buy the 3G iPad, for example, you need to buy a micro SIM, pay your monthly fee. If it's prepaid, you pay it for 6 months, whatever. But it's an extra expense, an extra bill that you have to pay, an extra lot of data that you have to keep track of, where right under your nose, literally in your hand, you can have your smartphone's data connection to help you stay connected on 3G rather if you only have a Wi-Fi only device. So check out your smartphone, Android or iPhone. That could be your connection on your tablet or other device. Even laptops can be used in that manner as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Another interesting question I received is the ability to – the one reader wrote into us here at the Tech Guide Forum and said they're having problems with connecting extra devices to their network. Every time one device is connected, another one drops out. And the reason I'm responding to this question is I've had the very same problem. My modem was provided by my ISP, and I had the same problem. I had a brand new modem. Modem/router, so it was my router as well. And every time I tried to connect all my devices, and as you can imagine here at the Tech Guide office, we've got plenty of devices that are connected to the internet. You know, I've got my computer, I've got my printer, I've got my Blu-ray player, my set-top box, all of the stuff I've got connected to to the internet. Many, many products. But the problem I found was that every time I connected a device to the new modem, my PlayStation wouldn't work, or another device that was normally connected wouldn't be able to get on the internet. Now, the reason I found was that the number of IP addresses that this particular modem allowed, and this was a modem provided by an ISP, I should point out, was set at 10. Now, as I mentioned, I've got so many devices here. I can do 10 devices connected to the internet in my sleep. There's so many devices I've got connected here, including in my home theater system. I've got my Apple TV connected, my PlayStation, my Blu-ray player, as I mentioned, even my AV receivers connected to the internet. So 10 products for me just wasn't enough. So what I had to do, I had to go into the settings of the router, which can be accessed through a browser. You just look into your, if you have whatever particular modem router you're using, there should be be an address like a 168. Whatever the address is, 192, and that'll get you into then the router's control panel, and that allows you then to set the number of IP addresses that the modem can assign. So rather than it only having a limited number, and when some come on and off the network, though the ones that are on that happen to be on at the time are the ones that are connected, every other new connection is rejected because there aren't enough IP addresses assigned. So with the default set to 10, I decided to set it the default to 99, and the problem disappeared. So if you're having that kind of issue, check with your ISP. If you check your modem router's your manual to see if you can get around that problem, to get into the control panel and change that setting once and for all. Boy, how quickly time flies. That's it for another week. It's been great to have your company again this week. And as I said, we'd love to hear from you. Send us some feedback. When you subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some feedback. But also send us an email here at info@techguide.com.au. Or, as I said, come through the Tech Guide forum if you'd like to have your question answered. There may be some kind of fault you're having with your product. You might want an opinion on a particular device. Feel free to come through on the Tech Guide forum, where either myself or many of my readers can come to your rescue and offer our best advice. So really, thank you for your company. We look forward to seeing you again next week.